Is there anyone else in the audience who'd like to comment to the motion on the board? Seeing none, back to the committee. Any final thoughts? Dave?
Yes, I was going to actually say some of this at the full council meeting. I'm going to say some of it right now. I'm not a lawyer. I don't understand the discussions between the two lawyers in the room arguing back and forth. Quite frankly, that doesn't really interest me that much. But I am a biologist, and I do understand the biology of fish quite well. And I want to say for the record that we've had a 16-year experiment with large closed areas, and to date, there's no proof of increased productivity. And if you want to look for proof, go and look at your own stock assessments. That's what I've done. Go and look at the toes that are done in the closed areas. You should be seeing 15-year-old fish on a regular basis in these areas. They're not there. You're hard-pressed to find a fish over 8 years old in general. And there's a reason for that. And the reason is that these are temperate zones. The fish don't stay in the closed area. I don't care if it's the size of New England. They're not going to stay there. They got tails. They know how to use them. I support this motion because it keeps areas 1 and 2 closed during the spawning season. It's not open year-round. It's closed when the fish are spawning. I support spawning closures. We have discovered through careful scientific analysis that round fish, cod, haddock, things like that, have a courtship ritual. It's very detailed, and it requires two things, near total darkness and pretty near complete quiet. And that means no fishing in those areas by anybody. I don't care, commercial or recreational, because they all create noise during those spawning closures. And this continues to keep those areas closed. As I said numerous times over the last, I don't know how many years, in temperate zones, fish respond to three basic things: bottom water temperature, food, and sex. That's it. And bottom water temperature determines where the other two happen. And, there was a paper issued last night by the Science Center. Probably a lot of people haven't had a chance to look at it. But it's to this issue of closed areas. These fish are moving to the north and east. That's because the bottom water temperature is rising. The fish are going to seek out the temperature where they want to live. Their food's going to do the same thing. And they're going to have sex at those places and at those times when the conditions are right. And I think the time has come to discard the notion of closed areas as a panacea in temperate zones for fish productivity. There's simply no evidence of it anywhere in the world. Norway, I use this. My son's at ICES right now. He's in Bergen. Norway has just had set record quotas for cod. Not because their management is so stunningly terrific or so much different than ours. They've set record quotas for cod because their waters are warming and it's increased the productivity of an already large cod stock exponentially. Our waters are warming. We are on the southern range of a number of these species. There's a lot of things happening right now that we can't do one thing about. It's environmental. And our fish are moving to the north and east. That's good for our Canadian neighbors who lives to the north and east of us. They're probably going to see increased productivity. In fact, they already have started seeing increased productivity in Newfoundland again. So, I think it's time to get off the dime and do what we have to do to manage the fishery. And one of the things to do is to put this motion out there and let the service do the analysis, let the Science Center do the analysis, let them verify some of the things I've just told you and put it on paper and get on with it. Thank you.
Are there any other committee members who have a burning desire to comment? Okay. To committee members who support the motion on the board, please indicate so. It's unanimous, 10 to 0. Before we take a break, Tom, you have a couple issues, and Dr. Pierce. Go ahead.
Okay. Obviously, I support sector management. This particular action that we've just taken is very responsive to the pros of sector management and what we need to do for this industry that is so hard-pressed. However, we do, as a committee and certainly as a council, tend to do something that I think is inappropriate, and that is we continue to punt, as already referenced by the service, by Sue. We continue to punt many of the sector management issues to the service, and then we say, you figure it out. Well, I think we should, the committee and the council, give the service more specific guidance regarding what we feel needs to be looked at, what we feel needs to be considered as part of any action that pertains to sector operations plans. Now, I know that the council has said in the past, pretty much sectors, you work it out with the regional office, we walk away, we'll give some broad guidance, and that's about it. However, in this particular case, in light of the action that we have just taken, and in light of some of the comments made around the table and by the audience, I suggest that now we need to provide some specific guidance to the service as they consider, assuming the council approves this, as they consider requests for exemptions to closed areas. So with that said, I would make a motion, and it would be that when considering sector requests for access to closed areas, the regional office should include consideration of the potential for gear conflicts, shifts in fishing effort out of the closed areas, and impacts on protected species and lobster. Just to be very specific, we give a heads up to the industries that are paying attention to this very important possible opening of closed areas to sector fishermen. They need to focus on these issues. The service also needs to focus on these issues. So this is a specific acknowledgement by the committee and by the council, hopefully, that these things need to be considered as part of a very needed evaluation of requests.
I heard Sue state earlier that each of these issues were part of their consideration, but if it's important to the committee to send this iteration along, we'll be looking for a second. Once Tom gets it up on the board. Is there a second to the motion on the board? Frank.
For a second, I could just ask the office a question. Isn't that something you have to do anyway?
It's not your job. Yeah, as Terry just said, it is. I think Dave's point is signaling the sectors that it's not an easy thing to get from A to B without going through this whole thought process, and that just because they ask it, they might not get it based on what the outcome of the analysis is. I think that's what he's just trying to signal.
Dave?
I want the council to be on record as being active participants in the whole process regarding sector requests for exemptions to any rules and regulations that may be on the books as a consequence of plans we have developed. I don't like walking away from the process and saying, again, regional office, you figure it out. The regional office will do a great job. I know that. But this is, I think, a necessary heads up, and it sends a signal that indeed we are, that is, the council, is considering these particular factors as important as part of any request for an exemption.
Frank? Seconded by Frank. Laura, then Tom.
I would still maintain that this is fully within what the service does anyway. I think if you added to the motion, direct the regional office to consider reallocation of resources to manage the sector request in a timely manner by taking some of the 25 we heard about dealing with sea turtles that have already been reduced within level from 500 to 160. That would be helpful. And John, thank you for your comments earlier. I would definitely ask you to take a look at the overall staffing of protected resources, because it does seem that you have about as many staff members in all of NOAA handling the amount of boats, right whales, as there are right whales. That could be redirected to working on this in a timely fashion.
Tom.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't oppose this motion. As we've said, it's going to get done, and I understand Dr. Pierce's intention that it be stated specifically that that the council sees these types of analyses and as important. I guess my only thought with the specific language of the motion is that I want to make sure that it's not a signal that these are the only things that we care about, and that we're looking for the regional office, as they're obligated to do, to include consideration of all management objectives specifically. Perhaps I'd offer that as a friendly, if it was viewed in that way. In that case, I think it'd be it's something I can support, and I understand Dr. Pierce's thoughts on it.
You feeling friendly?
It should include consideration, so all the other factors, of course, that would be part of any evaluation, the service would have them on the list.
Dave Preble, then Gayful.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Yeah, if you're going to do that, then after the word should, it should say inter alia. But that notwithstanding, I don't want the agency telling me how to do my job, and I don't want to tell them how to do theirs either. I oppose it.
Dave Gayful.
Yeah, I support the motion because I think it's important to send a signal to the sector managers that the more they can do in their operations plan, the more they can address these particular issues. How are you going to deal with these issues? The easier it's going to make the services job. And so far, we haven't really stated that specifically. I do think that's important.
Tom?
I just point out that often the sector operations plans are announced for public comment, and the comment period is during a period that is between council meetings. And so, you know, the staff tends to review the sector operations plan requests and sector EAs, but we're in kind of a bind because we don't always know what the council wants to say about the ops plans. So to the extent that the council identifies in advance things that they want to consider or issues that they think that should be addressed, it helps the staff prepare more pertinent comments on the sector ops plans when they're being reviewed, because often we don't have a chance to run those comments past the council, so we're kind of walking a tightrope and making sure we're not overstepping our bounds on what the council wants. So when we know in advance what you want, it makes our job easier.
Other committee comments? Bonnie?
Bonnie Spinozola again. I don't know if you've gotten a chance to see the letter that we sent out, Atlantic Offshore Lobstermen's Association, but we did ask that if there is a NEPA process and if there is an EIS or whatever the process is to look at all of this, we would like to be included in that since we are definitely part of the economic impact, or would be. Thank you.
Your letter came late yesterday. Other audience comments? John, then Ron, then Vito.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be brief. I just see that this motion is very benign, and I think I don't know why anybody would oppose it. I mean, anybody that votes no for this motion would be sending a message that they're opposed to looking at all the other, you know, conflicts and shifts in effort and everything else. All it's doing is reiterating in the support to the service of what they're already going to do. But as Dr. Pierce says, I mean, these I've put in for exemption permits and everything else, and it's a long, lengthy process, and at least it sets some marching orders to the people that are sending them in. And that way the service isn't going to get buried and saying, well, you need to come back to us with something else. So I think it's benign. I don't think it's a problem with this, and I don't know why anybody would object to it. Thank you.
Ron.
Ron Smallwoods, Fisheries Survival Fund. I don't think this is a good idea. I think it's stuff they do already. And anything that delays or slows down the Habitat Omnibus Amendment could have significant impacts across the board. Most of these issues are dealt with or should be dealt with in the Habitat Omnibus Amendment. And a lot of other comments that were made earlier are things that should be dealt with in the Habitat Omnibus Amendment. I appreciate what you're trying to do with the overall actions this morning, and that's fine. Then my second comment is about gear conflicts. In a multi-species plan, are there gear marking requirements for gillnets? Right. And I think the council needs to go back and ask their staff. Remember, we had a gear conflicts committee, and there was a lot of work over the years on the issue of gear conflicts. And sometimes you don't want to revisit something and bring up a lot of the issues that will come up when you start formally within the process dealing with gear conflicts. For example, the requirement for a fixed gear fisherman to bring their gear home. That comes up all the time in these discussions. So the end result, after lots of hours and lots of days and lots of meetings on gear conflict, is let it up to the industry to decide how to deal with them.
Vito.
Well, in the interest of compromise, I tend to agree with both Ron and John. I think it's a benign motion. I think it's work that the service is going to do anyway when they consider any of these exemptions. And so I guess for that reason, we would support the idea of the motion. The rationale just before it is not up here, and I'm not sure how that gets reflected in the record, but I think about holding off, telling NIMS not to consider the committee motion until they resolve these issues wouldn't be what we would be supporting this motion for. But the motion as it sits to have NIMS consider it whenever, consider gear conflicts, we agree. Also just want to report that we're definitely actively and eager to work with fixed gear fishermen in the lobster fishery and also with the scallop fishery to try to resolve some type of gentleman's agreement. I think there has been some discussion, and I think people are getting closer to at least having something to bring back to their constituents and talk about. So we realize that it has to happen, and this is where I agree with Ron and Jimmy Ottolin's comments earlier, that you leave that up to industry, and industry will figure it out. It's not something that you can really do here.
Okay, back to the committee. Any concluding comments? Dave Preble.
Yeah, thank you. I've listened to all of this, and Ron makes a good point that this is a lot of this is done in the habitat analysis, most of it actually. And to me, the term benign means it's not needed. I just don't see the point. I'm not violently opposed to it because it is benign. But I just don't see the point. It's just one more bunch of words to put into a document that's already overcomplicated. So I don't have strong feelings one way or the other, but I just see it as being an unnecessary addition to what we're proposing. And I would, if I could see, I'm probably going to lose this anyway. So I would say that after the word should, you should put in the word inter alia, to mean that these aren't the only things that should be considered.
Okay. You want to add that word, David?
Well, we can put Latin into the. It's that would. I guess it'll be consistent with what I am suggesting. So it should include inter alia.
Okay, with that, I'm going to call a question. No more comments. Those who support the motion on the board, please indicate so. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Those opposed? And those abstaining? Motion carries 7-2-1. Dave.
Yeah, I just wanted to just explain that inter alia simply means among other things. It means it's not, this isn't the only thing you're saying, so that's all it means.
Okay, we're going to wrap this up pretty quickly and take a break. Tom, you've got a couple issues.
Well, this kind of falls into this motion, and I guess the committee has talked generally that the intent of these motions is for mitigation measures to improve access to fish. And I guess, you know, a question that's come out of the closed area tech team as they started to look at some of this stuff, and it will probably come up at the regional office, is that, you know, it's entirely possible that when we examine some of the areas like the Lightship closed area, it's not going to increase harvest of Georges Bank haddock or redfish or pollock. And so I guess a little bit of further discussion by the committee explaining the rationale for the motion might be helpful to support or the decision to or to not allow access to some of these other areas that maybe don't fit within the boxes that have been discussed so far.
Tom.
Thanks. I think that's a great point, and I think it is important that we provide rationale. As we all know, most, if not all, of the fishing businesses in New England are diversified across fisheries, and that a lot of the people that are going to be directly impacted by the ACL cuts in groundfish and the experience currently in groundfish also participate in and rely on the monkfish fishery, the skate wing fishery, and a number of other fisheries. So I think the intent here, in addition to mitigating or providing access for additional groundfish opportunities for robust stocks there, we should also be looking for opportunities to provide access to additional profitable fisheries and in areas that allow those businesses to succeed. So I guess that's the rationale. Certainly with the example that Tom brought up in the Lightship, the west end of the Lightship, that's an area where there are skate wing and monk fishing opportunities at certain parts of the year, and those would be valuable opportunities to a number of fleets. So I think our rationale should be clear that we're looking at a diverse range of opportunities to mitigate mitigate some of the things that we're facing.
David.
Yeah, Tom just made my point. Monkfish, skate, maybe even fluke, there'll be other opportunities for fishermen that they can pursue in those areas. So just have to look at you know, where those fisheries are taking place right now, and will indeed there be some benefit in those areas, and there will be, I suspect. Plus, perhaps there might be an added benefit, tough to quantify, but certainly in a qualitative way. If I recall from the plots of bottom provided by the Habitat Committee, the technical people regarding where we might want less fishing effort, it seems to me that there is a lot of bottom that between the Nantucket Lightship area and closed area one that perhaps could benefit by less effort. So if boats shift into areas that are now going to be opened, that could cut down on some of the effort on that bottom that is hard, that right now is open, and it may close eventually, but it's right now it's open. So a shift of effort to other areas where the bottom may not be so sensitive.
Dave.
Yeah, I'm going to call your attention to something slightly different, especially with the Nantucket Lightship closed area. My hope is that there'll be an increase in capture of little skates from that area. There is an interaction between little skates, blackbacks, and yellowtail. It's been well documented. It was documented by Yale scientists back in the late 40s or early 1950s. And when the little skate populations are high, the blackback and yellowtail populations, especially blackbacks, tend to be low. This is this whole idea of having everything at MSY at the same time. The Nantucket Lightship closed area has become the haven of the little skate. The place is blasted with them. Consequently, there's not really many yellowtails or blackbacks in there. And, you know, this is the law of unintended consequences. When you basically don't harvest everything evenly, you end up with these imbalances which keep, some fish from returning to levels that you'd like to see them at. So, I mean, that is my goal of getting a Lightship area opened up, is to harvest a bunch of those skates, and hopefully the productivity of our yellowtails and blackbacks will increase. Thank you.
You good with that, Tom?
Sue, sorry.
To Tom and Dave's point, these areas are being opened to groundfish vessels, especially under the agency's sector rule. We can only open it to groundfish trips. So, you know, if someone's on a groundfish trip, I suppose, fishing for monkfish or skate, that would be acceptable. I'm looking to the council for this. But if it's, say, you know, they just want to go in there to get skate, you know, under a skate exempted fishery that's not currently allowed, that would not continue to be allowed.
just to clarify, yeah, these are sector vessels with groundfish permits enrolled in sectors that are harvesting monks and skates. So on a groundfish trip, on a sector trip, yeah. So I think those are specifically the folks that were increasing the opportunities, and the only folks that we can target through the sector operations plans, as I understand them. An exempted fishery or, increased access for, through another mechanism would have to, basically be proposed and put forward and through a different process, I think.
I have one more issue, and I'm treading into waters that I'm not sure I fully understand. Maybe some of the other people do. Correct me if I'm wrong, that the current rules for general category scallop fishing allow a vessel fishing on a groundfish day to land his general category scallop IFQ while using trawls. Is that correct? Anyway, I think we may have to look at some of the interactions between the scallop fishery and sectors in this plan, particularly with respect to some of the scallop access areas. There may be interactions there that we haven't fully explored.
Vito, you got a closing comment here?
Vito Gigoloni, Northeast Seafood Coalition. Sorry, I'm not sure. It sounded like Tom was looking for a little guidance on what trying to achieve with opening the areas. I just wanted to point out, again, if the sectors are going to be the avenue that we use for proposing it, we wouldn't want to preclude or put some type of false expectation on there about that you can only provide access based upon healthy stocks being known to be in high concentrations in those areas, because increased CPUE, even on other allocated stocks that may not be thought that we're going to increase, is actually a benefit to the industry, both in fuel savings and efficiency. So there may be a lot of other reasons why people would need access to that, and I think under the hard tax scenario, that's the point. So I didn't want to leave Tom with the impression that we're only looking to get access to pollock, redfish, and haddock.
Okay, I think you've just touched off another comment from Tom.
Well, Vito, that's your opinion, but the council record is that, or the committee record is that, the purpose for allowing access to these areas is to mitigate the effects of the expected low ACLs by allowing targeting of species where we're not catching the ACL. Mm-hmm. And so, this becomes kind of weird stuff that we have to worry about when we write documents, when we write the purpose and need. We need to make sure that we evaluate whether the measures are meeting the stated purpose and need of the action. So the committee and the council need to be clear about what their purpose and need is for this. To this point, it's been to mitigate the low ACLs by allowing increased access to other species. If there's going to be a different rationale, then the committee needs to spell that out.
Thank you. Great point.
An ex-committee member.
Yeah, just in reference to the Nantucket Lightship closed area, last April we fished right up to the edge of that and was catching a lot of haddock. So I can't tell you there's haddock in that area, but I have a sense that there is at times. So, and we don't know because we haven't been in it. So I would just submit that if that area, if the haddock is as healthy as they say that it is and they're expanding, then there's very likely at times to be haddock in that area.
Okay. Thank you all for a good discussion. We're going to take a 10-minute break and reconvene with TMGC overview and the ABCs.